NCC rotation week for the round week, so banana perennial pastures are grazing closer to the 2.5 and 3 lead stage, compared with 2 to 2.5 leads. So what they kind of, the Lincoln University Demonstration Farm, when they extended the rotation, they actually eliminated one application year, so they did one less rotation of each paddock, so that automatically removed 25 units of N per hectare out of the system. The other thing is not applying nitrogen fertiliser in January and February, when soil mineralisation rates are high and hopefully clover is fixing nitrogen, and in some situations there may also be a soil moisture deficit at that time as well, so thinking about how you're going to get maximum benefit there, looking at opportunities to optimise the growth of clover. There may just be some paddocks that might get skipped from routine applications, and that particularly your effluent areas, so looking at this being applied to there. Making sure that we're actually monitoring how much feed we've got on the farm and what that looks like in terms of the demand, so that you're actually utilising the nitrogen when you need to grow that grass, rather than just putting it on because it's something that's been done previously, because we know there's a lot of variation from year to year in terms of the growth rates in different months. And then thinking about those high fertility areas. And there's some other things that can be looked at around different products, post-urea, gibberellic acid, that doesn't actually increase the total amount, it just moves when that feed's available, and there might be some opportunities for fertigation as well. So there's a number of resources available that have been generated for the dairy industry in particular, but I'm sure there is for with beef and lamb as well, in terms of opportunities around optimising the nitrogen fertiliser use. If we now move on to the winter crop management, and I just started with brassicas. So one thing that's probably more recently is looking at soil testing to 15 centimetres to the soil mineral N, because that gives us indications in terms of how much nitrogen is actually available in that soil, and therefore the nitrogen fertiliser requirements can be refined from there. So we know that kale responds really strongly to nitrogen application. And in the top graph on the right hand side is some data from a large database that we've pulled together. And along the bottom is the crude protein content of the feed. And then we've looked at all of the samples to see what the range is in the crude protein content. So in the top graph, we've got that top line with the circle, the closed circles is the range and kale concentration of the samples in that database. So you can see that we've had a few samples in there down at 5% crude protein, quite a lot in the sort of 50% of them in that sort of 12 to 16%, but there's samples in there right out to 25% crude protein, and a lot of that would have been driven by the nitrogen fertiliser regime. So if we put on more fertiliser, then even if the conditions are not right to grow more dry matter, the plant will take up that nitrogen and just increase the crude protein content. So again, important to think about how you're using that nitrogen fertiliser. So the recommendation is a 50-50 split of that at 6 weeks and 12 weeks after establishment. What are the risks if we put on too much nitrogen or put it on too late? Well, nitrate poisoning is a challenge, or can be an issue if it goes on too late. But as I've mentioned, those high crude protein levels, when there's too much, basically what that does is makes there's too more nitrogen than is required by the animal through winter. So that excess nitrogen is excreted in the urine, and that increases our risk of nitrogen leaching. So what we want to be doing is trying to manage the nitrogen fertilizer to get the crude protein more in that optimum range, which is for non lactating animal cord through the that winter period. Mature animals is in that sort of 10 to 15% crude protein if the lactating is there is a higher requirement. The other thing to consider in terms of the winter crop with brassicas is thinking about the nitrogen fertiliser required depending on whether you're doing minimum tillage or conventional cultivation. So that's again a discussion with your technical field rep. And then a number of brassicas calculators that are available now that can be utilised to predict the fertiliser requirements for your crop. So if you've got your soil test and then putting it into those calculators to work out what's going to be the amount of fertiliser to optimise the potential yield for that crop. And there is a plant and food document, a booklet, which is available online from the Dairy NZ website, but also from other websites around the management practices for forage brassicas in terms of getting that good yield but minimising the nutrient inputs. If we look at potter beet, again important to be looking at the soil mineral N. The work that's been done by Plant and Food and others over a number of years has demonstrated that there's no yield response above 100 kilograms of total nitrogen fertiliser for a potter beet crop. Again, the timing of that's important, so 50% at sowing and 50% for canopy closure. The other thing to consider around potter beet is the potassium levels, the need for boron and what might be required there, and then in terms of maximising the yield is maintaining that healthy crop canopy, because that's our solar panels to be pushing grows down into the bulbs, which ends up being a higher proportion of the feed. So if we look at some data from some soil mineral data from the Southern Dairy Farm a couple of years ago, so I'll just talk through this the graph here. So we had a range of paddocks that were sampled prior to going into or being established. And so the blue bars there are the mineral nitrogen, mineralised nitrogen levels from our first year crop paddocks. So that's coming out of grass. There is a bit of a range here, but paddock 103, so the last one there, that was actually a paddock that had been cropped a couple of years before, so it has more long-term pasture, whereas the other paddocks have been in a pastoral system for quite a lot longer. So you can see higher mineral N there. Then we have a series of paddocks, so the green bar, where they had been sort of second-year crop paddocks, but they had been grazed the previous year. So there was quite a lot of urine and dung return. We then had some paddocks that had been, the majority of the paddocks, because they'd been in potter beet, had actually been lifted, so didn't have that dung and urine return, and the biomass was taken off that paddock by lifting, and so lower levels there, and then actually that year we had a few new crop paddocks. So you can see there's a huge variation in the range of the available nitrogen in those paddocks before the crop goes in. So if we've gone in with the same amount of nitrogen fertiliser, if we'd gone in too low, we potentially wouldn't have had enough for the extra crop, the lifted crop paddock, or we might have had too much for our extra pasture one. So it's a real opportunity to be doing those soil testing and refining what you're doing with your nitrogen fertiliser management. So now just moving on to the farm systems research at the Southern Dairy Club, and this is, we've just finished our third year with this comparison, and what we've been looking at is systems based on either kale or potter beet wintering, and then at true levels of intensity. So basically what we did was we took our standard kale system and we said, right, what do we do to decrease nitrogen, electric in that system by 30%. So that's our target, a 30% reduction in nitrogen emissions. We looked at the tools that were available to us at that time, and it really came down to our nitrogen fertiliser management and imported feed. So in the table, you can see that our standard system for carbon water beets get 190 kilograms of N per hectare. That's a 70 kilogram application in sort of first round of August, September, and then approximately 25 kilos a hectare after each rotation. With our lower impact system, so our blue and yellow farmers, they get 50 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare on their pasture area, so that's a 20 kilogram application in September, a 15 kilogram application in November, December, and 15 kilograms in February, March. And associated with that, there's a number of decision rules that affect the exact timing. So in the spring, we have to have soil temperatures above 7 degrees and rising. We use a slow product in spring extrusion to ensure that we've got some additional sulphur going in there. Protective urea during the summer period. If we're going into a dry period in summer, we will not continue applying those applications in our standing system. And then there's no applications after the 15th of April. That's we cut off prior to that. So as I said, we've just finished our third season of this comparison. So what have we found? Well, we even after 6 months, we had more clover in our lower pack system. So nearly double the amount of clover. So we're sitting at about 18 to 19% clover in our lower impact system, and sort of 8 to 9% in the standard system. But there is quite a lot of variation between paddocks. So in summertime this year, we had some of our lower impact system paddocks that were up to 50% clover in them. So we're starting to see some changes happening there. So that's, I guess, giving us more natural nitrogen in that system. We used the estimated pasture growth. We are seeing differences between our standard system and our lower impact system. And you can see the data there. We are improving our growth year on year at the Southern Dairy Hub. So for those who are not familiar with the hub, it was converted to dairy in 2017 from the, I guess, some of the low intensity support farm for the Makarewa, the freezing works there. But you can see there, we're increasing year on year, but also with that increase is the difference between our standard, our 190 kilos, and our lower impact systems is getting greater. So it was only just over half a tonne in the first year, whereas the estimated, we've still got to go through a few bit of the data for this season that's just finished, but it's looking like we're potentially up to 2 tonne difference in total pasture grown for this season. And that is one of the reasons why we decreased the stocking rate in our lower impact systems, because the prediction was that we would grow less grass. What have we seen in terms of the leaching losses? So if we look just specifically at the crop, so we've got our kale versus water bed, and the research team have been looking at the nitrogen leaching losses under those crop paddocks. We can see that in the winter time, we've had lower leaching from the winter grade water bed compared with the kale. So our kale is sitting just over 100 kilos of nitrogen per hectare compared with about 55 kilos for the winter grazed water bed. You can see here that the autumn grazing and lifting of the water bed is, so the losses from those areas are nearly equivalent to what we've seen with the winter grazed kale. And that's because that area, with the way that things have been happening, the way that the monitoring's been done, those paddocks that fallow for right through until October, so they've got nothing growing in them from April or late April, May, right through, so there's more, a longer period of that, for that nitrogen to be leached out. One of the comments we've had was, well, it's fine getting that lower leaching from the fodder bed, but you've got a higher yield with the walkout in the paddock, so surely the losses from an individual paddock are higher. That is not the case, so you can see in the table below that the nitrate leach throughout winter in the spotted beet system is about half that in the kale system. And then I guess the last bar on that graph here is the leaching losses that were recorded from the pasture paddock. So these are not grazed in the winter, but this is there's some measurement devices, so this is the losses, I guess, of the urine through the winter period. And that number is very close, because what we've measured is very close to what Otis and Nancy's got estimated potential loss from the pastures. So that's looking at, I guess, as the individual components of the system. What happens when we put the grass and the crop areas in the farm together? What we can see is the lower impact systems have reduced the nitrogen leaching by between 18% and 26%. So in the kale system it's 18% and in the fodder bed system it's 26%. So our target was to reduce the nitrate leaching by 30%. So if we compare our standard kale, which is our control system, with our low-impact fodder bed, the reduction has been achieved up until the end of last season was a 34% reduction. So we've achieved slightly more reductions than what we predicted from that system change. So that's all very well in terms of I guess the nitrogen leaching and the environmental impact, but there's a few other things that we need to consider. Before I get on to that, one of the things that we've been looking at as an industry, because it's very difficult to measure nitrate leaching and we rely on modelling, is the role of nitrogen surplus or purchased N surplus in predicting N leaching. So this is some work information from Canterbury, looked at the relationship between nitrogen leaching and N surplus, and it is a very good indicator. And the thing about a purchased N surplus is it's very relatively simple to calculate for your farm, because it's just looking at the nitrogen imported in feed and fertiliser minus the nitrogen outputs in meat and milk. And so in terms of those inputs, the feed and fertiliser, both of those are very much under control of your management. So it might be something that just worth looking at. And I know for the dairy farmers as part of the Fonterra Tiaki plan and other plans that are available, there is that simple N surplus calculation. So be encouraging to go and look at that and see where you're sitting. In terms of the benchmarking, UNZ has started looking at using purchased N surplus and some benchmarking for the industry, and looking at it relative to operating profit. So just to finish off, what we have found is, yes, we've achieved some environmental impact benefits, but especially for our low impact system, it's been at the expense of profitability. We have also reduced methane emissions, but also with that expensive profit. So we way to go in terms of maintaining profitability. So just to finish off, actions you can take now. Understand the current and future environmental regulations. I know lots happening in Southland at the moment around where things may land, so keeping abreast of that. Reviewing the current nitrogen your new strategy, knowing how much you're actually have applied last season, calculating a simple end surplus, and then utilising all of the available tools and resources and support to develop that plan to optimise your nitrogen management. And that's me, thank you.